Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Health Matters. My name is Sitenin Lea, and this week, today is the 30th of October, and October is pink and blue. And pink because we are commemorating Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and the staggering statistics are what are alarming, as breast cancer is the second most common cancer in women in Zimbabwe, accounting for 21% of all female cancer cases after cervical cancer. Yeah. And according to the World Health Organization, in 2022, there were an estimated 2.3 million women who were diagnosed with breast cancer and 670,000 deaths globally. It was the most common cancer in 157 countries out of the 185 in 2022. And this is a very saddening thing. And other statistics should be highlighted that breast cancer does not only occur in females, but also in males. Breast cancer occurs in every country of the world, and this is according to the World Health Organization. This is in women at any age after puberty, but with increasing rates in later life. Global estimates reveal striking inequities in the breast cancer burden according to human development, for instance, in countries with a very high human development index. One in 12 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime, and one in 71 women will die of it. In contrast, in countries with a low HDI, while only one in 27 women is diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime, one in 48 women will die from it. But this month, we chose to celebrate the survivors, the winners, and the people who have beat the disease. And one thing that we should recommend is positivity, positivity, positivity. But, and before even getting there, we should also recommend all those women who go for detection. Early detection saves lives. And looking at statistics and the best way, there are some things like certain factors increase the risk of breast cancer, including increasing age, obesity, harmful use of alcohol, family history of breast cancer, history of radiation exposure, reproductive history such as age that menstrual periods began, and age at which you first had your pregnancy. Tobacco use and postmenopausal hormone therapy. Approximately half of breast cancer development in women who have no identifiable breast cancer risk factor other than gender female and aged over 40 years. Family history of breast cancer increases the risk of breast cancer, but most women diagnosed with breast cancer do not have a known family history of the disease. However, lack of a known family history does not necessarily mean that a woman is at reduced risk. Certain inherited high penetrance gene mutations greatly increase breast cancer risk, the most dominant being mutations in the genes. Women found to have mutations in these major genes may consider risk reduction strategies such as surgical removal of both breast or chemo prevention. However, we go back to the issue of always checking one's breast, and when somebody is doing this, they should also remember to have their armpits. Start self-check, start from the armpits going upright into the middle of the breast and feeling around. And once any lump is detected, it does not mean that that is the end. It is important for people to always have the right support system and to also understand that being diagnosed with cancer, no matter which stage, does not mean that that person is going to die. But anyway, this week I want to focus on some of the people that came through and spoke to us about their journey with breast cancer and the win and the fight that they went through, actually. And I'm going to rerun some of the conversations that I had with Lucia and another, and her dad as well, who actually was the first to be diagnosed with breast cancer, but he survived, he won, and that is Mr. Boboto. And also Miss Reed, let's hear what they had to say in this month of October as we end Pinktober. We're not about sad stories this time. I had the privilege of meeting a young lady, Constance. That was May, I think, this year. And we got talking. And sometime last weekend, as I was looking for my winners, I actually sent a message to ask if she was in Harare. She told me she's in Hwange, where she works. And lo and behold, I come to Bulawayo and we bump into each other. So I'm grateful to God for this connection. And welcome to the show, Constance.
Isis, thank you very much. And we need to just give all the praise and honor to the Lord. He made this possible.
Yes.
He set it up for us.
Yes. So first things first, Constance, as we are celebrating winners, we have to start at the beginning. How was the journey for you?
The journey is tough. That I can say to anybody and everyone out there. The journey itself is tough. But one thing is, with faith, everything works out. And for me, I just say, it's all grace. It's nothing to do with me. It's all grace.
Okay. And as somebody who was already in the corporate world, how did you find the work balance and looking after your health after your diagnosis?
Lucky. I've got a supportive team, and I think my bosses just decided to walk with me. My workload did not change, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
My office is a busy office, but they were there to offer support. My team, my immediate team, my subordinates, and the people around me also rallied with me, and they took certain responsibilities away from me, especially the first 3 days when you go in for your chemo and you come out and everything is just going wrong. For those 3 days, I only had to field what was important. My team just took everything upon themselves. Funny enough, I work in the coal industry in Hwange, and it's extremely hot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a geologist. I have to work in the sun. So you can imagine the combination of chemo drug.
Chemo takes like 21 days to get out of your system.
And my cycle was 21 days. Every 21 days I have to do it.
Wow.
But every 10th day, I would fly back to Hwange and be at work. I only went into the field in the early hours of the day. After 10, I was in the office. If I needed anything done, I worked over the phone. My team did the field work.
Yeah, and when we spoke earlier in the year, one of the most remarkable things that I took away from you was the fact that you had a journey to walk with finding the right doctor. and I remember the thing that I took away was your spirit saying no, and you actually went on the journey even further. So how did that go?
That was a very interesting one. And I think my mom was the one who said, whenever you walk into a room, if your spirit is not comfortable, that's not your place. And that helped me in trying to pick the best oncologist to work with. First time I was referred to somebody who's young, almost my age. We had treated a close friend's wife, and they said, you will get along with this doctor. I went to their rooms, but something just did not sit well. I never got to meet the doctor, but just their space, their rooms and their reception, and it just did not sit well with me. I left. I went to one of the world-renowned oncologists, and I got there, and same vibes came at me. So I decided, let me go home and leave it. This all happened in the space of 2-3 days. And as I was driving from town, I just saw a certain post, And I turned and I drove there and I got there and I was at peace. I was at peace. And coincidentally, I did not need to make an appointment to see the oncologist. I was just asked, we'll just sit here. We'll go and tell the oncologist and see if they're okay. Somebody comes back and says, Doc says, are you okay with just sitting here? She still has one patient and then you can see them. And I said, not a problem. By the time I left that room, I already had an appointment for the next steps. So I like I said, it's more about grace and it's more about you just handing everything and saying, lead the way. Well, whoever you are, lead the way. I know we believe in different things, but whatever you believe in, hold on to that and let it lead you. And that's my story.
Yeah, and looking at your story and finally like getting the diagnosis, how did you get to that point?
I noticed a lump. Mm-hmm. But it was just one of those. I was never one who did your normal checks and all. So this thing just came out of the blues, and you have something, and it keeps irritating you. For me, it was more the irritation, not even the thought, but it was just an irritation of this little lump that's sitting there that I can't understand. So I went and got it scanned. Story, it's a long story. Got misdiagnosis twice. But something in the end kept persisting and saying, no, let's get to the bottom of this. And it's interesting. It was just a tiny little thing. But when they did do the biopsy and the pathology test and everything, it then turns out to be stage 3B. And I had no pain whatsoever. It was just that little lump, and it was a very small lump. So, yeah. It's one of those, but
yeah. And stage 3, you know, a lot of people get skeptical and get worried about this numbers and stage 1, stage 2, stage 3, and there's a B in front. And you are told this. How did you take it?
First instance, immediately after being told, obviously, I now need to plan for my death. That was the first thought. So what's going to happen? I've got a child. She's about to write her O levels. So if I'm to die today, what's going to happen to her? I'm a single parent, by the way. And you then now start processing. You look at everybody else around you. Do I plan the funeral? Do I tell them what it is that I want? But immediately after that, for me, same day I got my diagnosis, my youngest sister gave birth. So I then asked myself, amidst the tears, the anger and everything, I then asked myself, do I want this little child to grow up with the stigma to say on his birthday is the day that my guru also got this diagnosis and it was the end of her life? I told myself, no, I picked myself up. And
that
from there, that same day, I told myself, I am going to fight this. It wasn't easy. You know, it's you relapse. One day it's anger, the next day it's pain, the third day it's crying, the next day it's the fighting spirit. So it's a roller coaster of emotions. It's a roller coaster of emotions. But by the time I got to day 15 and had done all the crying, had done all the praying, and I should say, only 3 people knew
at that point.
I was the fourth. For the those first 15 days, it was just the 4 of us. And I'm doing my own research. These guys are telling me. And it was like a battle. But by day 15, I knew I'm not going. I don't want to die. I want to live. And the fight started from then. Up to today, I see people and I tell them, just fight.
And looking at your numbers, 4 people, 4 including you.
How was your support system? How did they help you go through this journey? Those first 15 days, these guys, all of them are in the medical fraternity. So it was more me asking, what with this diagnosis, what do we do? How do we proceed? What are my options? And getting the medical side. And then I then also had to do my own research to say, look, the alternatives, what are they? What's there on the table? And they were there for me, that I should hand to them. They were there for me. They gave me all the information and they gave me the support I needed. Then thereafter, I decided I was not going to tell everybody. I told my immediate family and a couple of my closest friends and one or two others. And that was it. I swore them to secrecy and told them, we fight this. I know they went to other people, but they did it without giving out my name, to just say, we've got somebody who needs prayers. We've got somebody who needs support, and that was, it helped. And I have a group of sisters, my former schoolmates, especially people from my class. Some of them did not even know what I was going through, but because a call had just been made to say one of us is fighting, up to today, they have become not just former classmates, but their sisters, because in their own way, they gave support to and somebody we had no face, but they just knew it's a sister who needs us. They came through for me. There's St. Dominic's girls, former St. Dominic's girls. You girls are a force to reckon with, and I take my hat off to you. And I have learned to pass it on like you asked me to. I pass it on.
Well, I guess St. Dominic's is quite remarkable, because I've actually made quite several, a number of them over the past year plus. Mm-hmm. And yes, kudos to them. And some of them are even in the UK. There's Carol and Carol and Carol, yeah. There's quite a number of Carols from St. Dominic's. Mm-hmm. I don't know which year you were in there, but yeah. But then now, one thing that I also come to respect about you is your advocacy and speaking to people that, you know, are fighting with the battle right now, mm-hmm. trying to push them to understand that you can win. Mm-hmm. What makes you do that?
Look, there were people that also pushed me when we went for the chemo sessions. You would meet people. Others would tell you, look, for me, I know I am now on palliative care, but I still need somebody to speak and let the other generations know that this thing, early detection, will do the trick for them. So I just picked up from there and to say, is the same way that those guys were there for me and telling me to fight, I also need to make sure somebody else that's out there knows that you can fight this. And we pick up their spirit and we walk with them and teach them. Some people have put down their gloves already the day they get their positive result, but we need them to pick up those gloves, get there in, out there into the ring, fight this. It can be fought. I stand here, God help me, in the community, that village that we talk about was there for me. So that's what pushes me. If we can get one more person to fight, that's it. That's all we need.
Okay, and just before we close down, what message do you want to, would you tell your younger self today?
My younger self, number one, the medical checkups are important. Just continuously checking yourself and also just going for your annual medical examinations, also doing your mamas. I know we continue telling ourselves, no, ndeje varungu, ndeje, but well, let's do it. Let's do it. It will help us. And one more thing, my younger self, listen, keep the words of the elders, those wise words. That came back when I needed it. And up to today, I say thank you to young Connie for having listened to those words that you kept being told, that you can always fight and listen to what your body tells you, what your conscience tells you, what your spirit tells you. So kudos to young Connie. I respect her.
Please join us tonight as we speak to a hero who has fought and won the battle against cancer and is now an advocate. And joining me tonight in the studio is Lucia. And let's dive right in.
And just introduce yourself.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good.
A good hello to your listeners. My name is Lucia Bopoto, and I am a breast cancer survivor. I am also an advocate for early detection and a patient advocate as well. Should I go deeper?
Yeah, well, that would then bring me like early detection, especially with your journey and the age that you were told you have breast cancer. How was that for you?
Oh, I think it was, I don't know, I always describe it as a sudden rush of emptiness that just, it from my heart right up to my toes. I couldn't feel anything. I remember I cried, but I'm an escapist, so I push things away all the time. I was like, okay, what's next after this? What's next? But yeah, it was a rush of emptiness.
Okay, a rush of emptiness. And still on that issue of your age, how old were you when you finally?
I was 35. I think I just turned 35 a month prior to finding out that I have breast cancer.
And what had urged you to actually go for the checkup?
I was lying at home and I realized it's been about 6, 7, 8 months since I'd done my checkup. So I was like, okay, let me just do a self-check. And then I checked and then I felt like a small lump. But when I felt the small lump, I was like, it can't be, can it? So I ignored it for a bit. And then I checked, I think 3 weeks or a month later. And then it felt like the lumps had grown and now there were two lumps. So I panicked, and then that's what urged me to go to my doctor and get it checked out.
Also, like the first instinct with the first lump was, no, it can't be you. Just like, I'm too young as well.
Yeah, I think it's also a me thing that I always feel like I'm being dramatic. So I felt like, okay, I want cancer, me, it can't be. I'm just being dramatic. Let me see how it plays out.
Okay, and when you say you felt like you were being dramatic and all, and then now actually the journey of going to the doctor after discovering the second lump, how was it for you actually going there? You didn't even have doubt before that.
Yeah, even going, I was still doubtful. So I went to a regular GP, and he didn't have any screening material, so he had to do the self-check himself. And he didn't find anything, and I was like, ooh, phew. But he was like, you know your body better, so go get the scans no matter what happens. I wasn't a medical aide. He had to ask the scanning place to give me a discount just to make sure that I go. So I went, I got the scans done, and yeah, one of the lumps was suspicious, and they urged me to go for a mammogram and further tests.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I guess for me, the biggest takeaway always is support. How was it for you, like, they're now needing to disclose to your family and friends?
I think at first I was scared because my dad also had breast cancer, so I knew that my parents would panic. Mm-hmm. And I had alerted them that I'm going through all these tests, these series of tests. But then when the time came to actually disclose them, I think I just sent my mom a message, and I sent two other people a message. And then I decided to just put it out on Facebook so that I wouldn't have to text people and be like, hi, this happened. Yeah. Yeah. So I just put it out on Instagram, and I let social media do its thing. Because I also felt like it would be begging for attention to text someone and say, hi, I've got cancer. And then they'll be so shaken. And yeah, so I didn't want that whole drama.
Okay. So from the first time that you actually went through your chemo or medication, the treatments, how was it like? What kept you going?
That's a difficult one. Okay, can I answer this in two ways? Okay. When I first got diagnosed, I had like 5 days to prep myself and be like, I can do this. And then I went for treatment. And then I realized, this is not as easy as I thought. And then, you know, you still think, okay, if my dad could do this, and then you pray. I remember I'll just play the last song that I'd heard at church. I'd play it on YouTube on repeat, like afterwards. And then until the third cycle, I was like, I freaked out. I was like, I'm not doing this. I went to the my oncologist's office. I was like, I'm done. And she was like, okay, take some time off, relax, go talk to someone, and then come back. So I took that time off. I prayed. I spoke to a therapist. And then when I came back, you know, I was now ready to go back again. So I was like, okay, let me just do this and get this over and done with.
Okay. I guess one of the important things that we need to ascertain as well, with early detection, then you went, you got tested, and what stage were you on?
I was on stage two. It was stage two when they found it. So yeah, it was, but I always ask myself, if I hadn't waited a bit, maybe it could have been stage one. So the treatment could have not, maybe wouldn't have been as intense as it was, probably. Yeah.
So in your advocacy journey, what is your biggest push?
Self-check. My problem with most of the material that's out there is that they advocate for women to start getting mammograms when they are 40. But we've seen a trend of women below 40 getting cancer. More and more people are getting cancer. And when you're below 40 and you haven't breastfed, the mammogram won't show anything. In my case, the mammogram was perfect. It showed nothing at all. Sorry, I'm going to have to use my fan.
Okay.
Those hot flashes. Mm-hmm. So the mammogram was perfect when I went for a check. Mm-hmm. Because I was below 40 and I hadn't breastfed. But then the only way that we can get ahead of this is if we check ourselves. And once you start checking yourselves, you get to know your breasts, and then you know what they feel like. If you see, feel anything foreign, then you know to take action.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now you've told your parents, how did they take it and how was the journey for you with them?
I was in another country, so my dad freaked out, but my mom was like the buffer. I think also he kind of had guilt that maybe I passed this on. And my mom actually flew into Namibia. She came for about 2 therapy sessions, and then she came back, and then she came back here. They were quite supportive, you know, checking in as often as they could. My brothers, my siblings as well, were a big support system. Mm-hmm. But my dad, I realized that when I came back last year, because after treatment I decided to come home, he still had that. You could tell even in his interaction, he had that fear that, and my dad expresses fear in a very weird way. So his fear was overly trying to overcompensate, you know, but I had to also take a step back and realize that, no, this is his fear playing out for my life. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's how it went with them.
Okay. Then maybe given your journey that you've gone through and all, what would you actually say to the younger you? But like, what has been your biggest takeaway from the whole journey in total and even up to today?
I think human beings are so resilient. Mm-hmm. With God, I think there's probably nothing that you can't pass over. As long as you center God around it, you can, because I've gone through cancer. Younger me would have thought that there's no way I could go through cancer and come out at the end. And now I've realized that you can do it. So you can do almost anything. Human beings are incredibly resilient. And yeah, you can come out at the end of anything.
Okay. Listen, one other thing that maybe, you know, sometimes people don't understand, as we will continuously talk about self-check, mm-hmm. and, you know, going even to the doctors, taking up, because I know during October, most people, there will be free health checks on yeah. breast cancer and all. So people should actually take those up.
Yeah.
And what is it that the young girls out there should know? Like, what should they avoid? What lifestyle should they actually be keeping?
Okay, so I think the first thing would be, we can never rule out the fact that all these things will work. It's just increasing the chances of not being diagnosed. But exercise is one thing. Constantly exercise. They say 30 minutes a day of good exercise. Reducing alcohol. I know this one is contentious. Every time a study comes out, Instagram is on flames, because everyone who has cancer feels blamed that, are you saying I got cancer because of alcohol? But alcohol reduction, reducing the amount of alcohol that you drink, avoiding smoking, that's also something. And then also being cautious about what you eat. These days we eat a lot of fast food, we eat a lot of takeaway and stuff like that. Let's try and have a more plant-based diet that can at least yeah, reduce your chances. It won't keep you in the clear 100%, but it reduces your chances. And anything to reduce your chances is always a good thing.